important to Charles and I, if we sat down to just kind of discuss, like, what are the things that are most important that we do that we feel are important for us to do? And so that's just what I'm going to talk about. So I'll introduce myself a bit. I am married to Charles, who's one of the pastors here at Bethel. We've been married 20 years come August. We have four children.
Yeah, I know.
Not that old. We have four children. Emily is 16, Bethany is 13, Victoria is 7, and Bella, my youngest, is 4. So out of those four kids, we have just four extremely different personality styles. My oldest Emily is my rule follower, and if I could have had a million Emilys, I would have just kept having children, right? Because she was such an easy child, and she still is. I mean, she has her teeth problems, but she's a rule follower, right? Like, you just set the rules out, and then she will follow the rules. It doesn't matter what it is. So it's just an easy kid. Next is Bethany, my 13-year-old. She is my insanely strong-willed child who bought into everything and just has an opinion on everything. And yeah, so we butt heads a lot because we both have very strong opinions on what we should do with our lives. She tried to tell me, we just bought a new couch the other day, which is lovely, we all fit on it and it's way too big for the room, but we don't even care. But she tried to tell me the other day that we should just pick out seats so that we can each have our own seats so we're not fighting over it. As a phone, like, Dad and I will pick out the seats we want, and you guys get what's left over. And she was so offended. She's like, that's not fair, we have to do here. And I was like, when we start paying for things, then you can be fair.
Yeah.
And so Victoria is my next one, my 7-year-old, and she is my insanely sensitive child. That child will cry at the drop of a hat. We are not at all alike, so we don't understand each other very well because we are such different personality styles. Just looking at her sternly, she will cry. Like, you don't even have to raise your voice at that child, she just cries. Last night, it was so ridiculous. We made tacos for supper, and so we had this huge plate of cheese, and for whatever reason, she just took all the cheese, all put it on her plate. And so my husband is like, Tori, like, what is everybody else going to eat? If you take all the cheese, what's everybody else going to put on their plate? And she just bursts into tears. And she's like, Dad's so mad at me. I'm not mad. You're not feeling like Dad's mad at you. You're feeling bad. That's all. Like, just put the cheese back. It's fine. But she's also my child when she's about 4 or 5 years old. Came and she just saw me. And she's like, Mom, I have all these feelings and they always just come out of my face. Like, she's just in a class of her own. Like, this child, I can't understand her thinking processes. And, like, why she does the things she does. Like, she's into everything, absolutely everything. And so I'm, like, constantly having to look for her wherever we go. Like, she's got lost in this church dozens of times. And, like, finally I had to be like, I'm gonna spank you if you do this anymore. Because it just was too much. She has, like, just limitless energy. And she is absolutely not shy. And all of my other children are shy. They're introverted, but not this one. She will talk to anybody and everybody. And it doesn't matter if you know them or not. You'll go to the doctor's office, and you don't want her to touch other people at doctor's office. Right? They're there for a reason. And so we'll go there, and she's like making the rounds, trying to say hi and hug people. And I'm like, just sit and leave people alone. But yeah, she just loves to hug people. We went to Dollarama a while back, and there was just some elderly man in line behind us. We don't know him. And she just leaned over, and my husband was carrying her. She leaned over, and she said, hi, how are you? And he's just like, oh, I'm well, thank you. And she's like, would you like a hugging?
No.
And her and was like, what do we do? Stress that causes her parents. And this is our daily thing. Like, she loves coming to church just for the fact that she can just go around and say hi. So yeah. Yeah, so those are my four personalities. I'll tell you just one story about one of my girls, Ellie. but when they were about 3 years old, we came to church one day, and we were sitting just towards the back of the church, and this lady came to us, and she had an eye patch, and she just had eye surgery. Yes, it's that bad. And she's saying, poorly, we just had eye surgery. She's being a little self-conscious about her eye patch. And my daughter climbs up to my lap, like shaking in fear. And she wraps her arms around me and so super loudly in the middle of the sermon says, "Mom, there's a pilot behind you."
If you don't do it, you don't do it.
I'm not offended. I'm not getting my feelings hurt. It's okay. Don't put yourself in a position of oppression. Christ paid for everyone. And so we don't need to take on those feelings that I'm not doing enough, I'm not worth enough, I'm not. You know what? If you're not doing something somebody else does, who cares? You know, we're doing what works for our families, and every family is different, so we roll with that. Don't take on oppression that you don't need to take. All right. I was reading up on, not even about parenting, I was just reading up on learning, which sounds really stupid now that I say it out loud. But anyway, I was reading on learning, and it is an actual thing to try too hard. And so I'll explain it a bit. When we put a lot of focus and pressure on ourselves to, like, I need to do this and be a certain way and do a certain thing a certain way and whatever, so in this case would be parenting, our brains become stressed and overwhelmed. And I cannot be the only person who gets overwhelmed with too much information, right? There has to be other people, right?
It's me.
Yeah. And it is a real thing. And our brains get overwhelmed and they go into survival mode instead of growth mode. Right. Yes, and so then it becomes a cycle. And so it goes from stress to survival mode to falling back into old patterns and to getting upset with ourselves, which goes back into deeper survival mode. And it goes round and round and round. And then it results in us not learning anything anyway. Right? So, you know, be lenient on yourself. You know, give yourself breaks. You're learning. You're doing what you're doing.
I kind of feel like this is what happens to some kids when they go from kindergarten to grade one, and then they just can't handle it. My daughter comes home and says, it's just too much, can't handle it, and it's the same thing. It's just too overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same way.
Yeah.
Too much learning.
Yeah.
All the time.
I have one of those kids too, who just, when things overwhelm her, she just does. She loses control.
And then they revert back exactly to tantrums, just like what they were when they were two.
All right, so one of the high values for myself and my family is freedom. I said before, Christ purchased freedom for us, so I have no intention of ever giving that away or not using it. So if something impedes on my freedom, it goes in one ear and out the other. So you're welcome to do that. Like, don't let me impede on your freedom today. Don't feel like you have to do what I'm doing. If you think it will work for you and there's something in there that you sticks to you, then use it. But don't feel like I'm saying you have to do this. All right, and something else I learned while learning and reading about learning was that our brains learn even if we're unconscious about it. Even if we don't, are focusing ourselves to, say like we're just sitting in a room here discussing parenting with each other or whatever else. And even if we're not intending ourselves to purposely learn how to do something better, just absorbing whatever information goes in, your brain picks that up and it will learn from that kind of stuff as well, right? So we're just always learning. All right, so we need to keep in mind too that we don't always see the benefit of what we do for our kids right now. There's a lot of stuff we do that will be benefits later on, and there's a lot of stuff that we might not even see the benefits of in our lifetime. You might see it later on in their life, like when they're old and when they have their own kids. And whatever else, right? So we don't really see the fruit of what we're doing, but it doesn't mean we failed. Charles and I had the privilege this year of doing small groups in our church. And so we've been able to talk with people in our church who are older, who have kids, and some of them are serving the Lord. I have grown kids who are serving the Lord, and some of them aren't. Some of them have accidented or walked away. And they're just heartbroken over that. And I understand it is heartbreaking when your child isn't serving God. Like, you can understand the upset and the stress of that. But there are also some of the strongest women in the church who, like, you tell them, like, this is what I need prayer for. They're all over that. They're going to pray night and day for that kind of thing, right? And it floors me that they feel like they're failures. And I'm just like, but you could have done absolutely everything right. Like, your children also have free choice. They also have free will. Like, you could have done absolutely everything right and it still could have happened, right? It doesn't mean it's your fault. So I'm going to share an example about just a story I read, and just it amazed me, so I'll share it with you, and it's true. It's happened in 1912. It was a medical missionary, his name is Dr. Leslie. He traveled to a remote area of the Congo to minister to the people there And so for 17 years, he ministered in that area, traveling around to the different tribes, and they were very, very isolated. And in 17 years, he barely saw any movement for the gospel. So for 17 years, he traveled and he shared Christ, and I don't remember exactly how many people they saw saved, but it was a very, very small number. And so he came back to the U.S. and just defeated, and telling everybody, you know, my 17 years was a complete waste of accomplishing that thing. I did nothing with my life, I wasted it. And then 9 years later, he died. And believing that this whole 17 years that he invested into the people were just for nothing, because nothing happened. But in 2010, there was a group of researchers, they must have been Christian researchers, because I don't know why else you would look into it, but they went to the Congo to see the actual influence this person had in the tribes up there, and they thought they would see maybe like a few people who remember who he is, and it's just some of the lessons or whatever. And when they arrived there, they figured they had a limited knowledge of Christ, but no understanding of who he is. They discovered there was a network of churches, and they had one huge church, which I think sat, and they called it a cathedral, but like a very simple cathedral because they built it with the materials they had. And from that, they had churches that were planted off of that. So in the end, they had, I believe it was about 10 to 20 church plants, and then one big church where they all met, and thousands of people followed Christ. And it was all because this one person went there and for 17 years poured into these people and talked to them about Christ. And even though he didn't see any of the benefit today, they have this flourishing Christian community because of what he did. And but he didn't know it in his lifetime. It wasn't apparent to him. So yeah, he started their educational system. They had no educational system until he got there and he taught them reading and writing. They picked it up and ran with it. So yeah, they have just an incredible ministry now just based on what this person did. 1912, yeah. So just an encouragement, like the things we do today, they can last for a long time, and we see the effects for a long time and the good things we do. So God's not gonna waste a moment. You know, he's gonna take every opportunity there is to spread his word and to call us to him. All right, so my second point would be values and priorities. So just think about what are the values and priorities for things in your family. We're all gonna have different ones and different things that are high priority to us, and that's fine. We also have multiple priorities too. So just think about what's important to you in parenting. I'll share just a few of mine just to kind of give you an idea of what I'm talking about. One of our top priorities in our family is we believe in relationship over obedience. Our connection with our kids is of higher value than anything else. So it's more value than them being obedient to us. So our obedience is not a high priority to me, but like, let me be clear, like, I don't feel like my kids should be able to run around and do what they want. They don't. They still have to listen, kind of thing, but it is not a high priority. But that relationship of keeping that connection with your children also helps you with the obedience issue as well. Right? If you have a good heart connection and are at a good level with your kids working with them in that area, then it's going to affect every other area of their life too, right? So we work to have heart connections with our kids so that they know that we love and value them. We also hopefully show them how to guard their hearts and have good boundaries. My seven-year-old, my super emotional seven-year-old, she has fantastic boundaries. And I don't know how she developed them, but she has some great boundaries. And she's one of those kids who's just perfectly fine, like, to play with a large group of kids. But she's also perfectly happy to just go play by herself. And so it's not a draw for her to just be like, oh, I want to be part of the crowd. It just isn't. And so she had a friend of hers and just was picking on her. And it, whatever, they're good friends, so they'll get over it. Was just picking on her, just not being terribly kind. And so my daughter had stopped her and just said, you know what, if you're not going to be nice to me, I'm just not going to play with you. I'll go play by myself. And so she did. And then the other little girl finally came over and she's like, I'm sorry, I don't do it anymore. I'll play again. And they did. And they play. She'll do that often enough. She just has great boundaries. Like, she knows, like, I don't like this, don't do this, don't trample on in my stuff. And so, yeah, like, it's, I love her boundaries. I'm like, how did you do that? You have no fear of missing out. How did you do that? Yeah, so right? So I need them to talk kindly. I need them to talk, to be respectful. And they need the same boundaries to have me in their workspace as well, right? For me to treat them the way that they deserve to be treated and want to be treated. So I get to respect their boundaries as much as I want them to respect mine. And heart connections with your kids are just so easy when they're little, because they're all about mom, right? So it's really easy when they're little, I find at least. But with my older kids, I find it's a lot more work and a lot different depending on the style of the child and the personality of the child. My youngest is just absolutely the easiest to have a heart connection with, because she's just always right here. So we bought a new couch the other day, and I was trying to lay down on the couch and try to get her to lay down on the couch. And so I put her like on the opposite side of me, and then I went down on the side, and she scoots herself on over and push her back over, and she comes back over and I'm like, why can't she stay on your side of the couch so I can sit on my side of the couch? And she's like, Mom, if I sleep over there, then I can't hug you. I'm just like, oh. To do the things your kids need, because it doesn't always come as like a joy, right? So I just let that out there. Like, I don't always enjoy cuddling my kid, but I do it because she needs it. All right. So my second point is responsibility, or my second priority is responsibility. So I'm going to get Candace to read 2 Timothy 1:7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but a power of love and self-discipline. All right, some other translations will say self-discipline, self-control, or sound of mind as well. I'll mean the same thing. So one of the big rules in our house is you're not allowed to say, it's not my fault, I forgot they started it. They can say it, but it doesn't work as an excuse. I couldn't help it, they're not valid excuses. God gave you a brain. You know, and give you the capability to use it, so you're expected to, right? So, now, they're responsible for their own actions. Just as we are in control of ourselves, they can be in control of themselves. And keep in mind, they are children. They're going to make mistakes. They're experts at that. But they have the capability to take responsibility for themselves as well. All right, so it doesn't matter what's going on around, they can still be responsible for their choices, especially when teenagers. I heard a saying before that we use often with our kids, and it's give as few rules as possible, but as many as necessary. Because they still need a soft place to land, because they're going to make their mistakes, and they need a place to make mistakes, take responsibility, and face consequences. So, consequences for bad behavior are just so much easier in a child than they are in a teenager or an adult, right? So if they can get in their head when they're younger that you need to be responsible for yourself, like for your own actions and for what you're doing, it seems easier to me than to deal with the big things when they're older. So, and one of those things is they're responsible for their sins, and they're responsible for fixing them. So, they're inevitably going to make mistakes. All people have said, the Bible says that. So your kids are going to sin at some point in their lives if they haven't right now. So, they're responsible to fix those. And I'll explain a bit more of that in a bit. We have one exception to taking responsibility in our house, and that's if they feel like they're in a situation where they feel it's unsafe, or there's wrong things happening, or wrong choices, and they want to get out of it. And so we just tell them, just throw us under the bus. So they're allowed to just say, oh, my mom and dad said we couldn't, or they won't let me here, so that we're able to make the lay appearance, and they're just getting off scot-free. So that's the only exception we have there, like, you know, throw us under the bus if you need to. And if it's something that's going to protect you, throw us under the bus. So
that's what we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, all kids think your parents blame anyway. Might as well roll with it.
Yeah. I used to tell boys, like, I'm not allowed to be, sorry.
Right?
You can talk to my parents about it if you want. My parents had, like, no sense. I didn't know what to tell them.
I All right. So part of teaching our children about responsibility and teaching them about sin, is to teach them what sin is and how to flee from it. And so that's huge for me. Like, I want my kids to understand that they are in control of saying no to sin. Right? Can you read 1 Timothy 6:11?
But you, Timothy, belong to God, so run from all these evil things and follow what is right and good. Pursue a godly life along with faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness.
So this verse is talking about money, right? But I think we've seen enough in the Bible that Jesus would put it towards fleeing sin as well. And he often said, go and sin no more. So it says, I won't read it again. I can only protect my kids from so much. There's only so much I can do for them, so I need to be able to teach them how to purposefully turn themselves from wrong things. Right? If something looks wrong or it feels wrong, then they need to put effort in to turn from sin, because turning from sin is an effort, right? It's not always going to be easy. Sin is temptation, right? So it's not going to be easy. But I feel like the world doesn't better protect my children. Their goal is not to protect my children and to keep them in a healthy spiritual state, right? The world just seems to want to pull them into darkness and pull them into just wrong things. And it just seems easier in my head and long-term more effective to just teach them how to flee from sin now than to just, and how to take control of God and how to take control of themselves and purpose themselves towards godly things. Than it is for me to just be like, nope, keeping you from that. Right? Like, we have a lot of talks with our kids. All my kids are in public school, so they get the good things and the bad things from there. So part of that is they learn a lot about the LGBTQ stuff. And so as a rule of thumb, in grade 1-2, we talk to all of our kids about it. And we just share our values and our beliefs on it. And we just talk about that and keep it an open conversation from then on, because I think that's about when they start addressing it in my kids' school at least. And so we talk about it a lot so that, you know, even in that, we're not going to be able to protect them from everything. They're going to see people in the mall. They're going to see people walking on the street. So if we can teach them now how to flee from sin, how to turn from sin, it just seems easier in my head now to do that now. When they're little. All right.
That's good.
So fixing your problem. And I love this one. It is my favorite thing to do with my kids because it means so much less work on me. When our kids create a problem, they are responsible to fix it. Whether that means they need to give an apology, or they need to somehow do some sort of work to fix the inconvenience or damage they caused. So for example, if I have to take time out of my day to do something that they were responsible for doing, and they just didn't do, then they have to pay that back. It's unfortunate for them that I cost quite a bit to do the work. So when they have to do my chores, it's usually like double what they would have to do themselves. Especially for my older ones. My younger ones, not as much, because they're just not as capable as the older ones. But, so they pay back. They pay back what I have to exert energy to if they didn't do their jobs. And one thing that's great about teenagers, and this is fantastic, and it probably like for home kids too, I do not do any laundry anymore because I hate it. And I absolutely hate running laundry through and the dryer and everything. My older kids do all of it. So we put it all in the hampers, and that is just their job. They get to do all the laundry. And it's off my plate, and it's fantastic. I haven't done a load of laundry in years. It's absolutely fantastic. And so that's just one of their jobs. So, all right. It works in a lot of areas for fighting or not listening or being disrespectful. It also works if they create problems among themselves by picking on each other or being rude or whatever. It teaches them they are capable of fixing their own problems, that they don't always need us to step in and just do it for them. Right? That they actually are able to take care of themselves. They learn it requires thought and energy, and it teaches them to reconnect the relationship that's been damaged when they have to fix their own problems. One of my kids, she didn't want to admit to her teacher she got in trouble. I don't remember what it was for. It was a few years back. And so she wanted to go, their whole class was going to Winnipeg for, what is is that date in Winnipeg where they do festival? To go to that, I mean, you warn her ahead of time that if you do not stop whatever you're doing, you're not going. And she did. And she said, okay, you're not going. And that was that, right? We just sent her permission slip, she couldn't go. And so the day before, her teacher calls me. And she says, oh, Bethany doesn't have her permission slip in. And she's like, you know, I understand it's an early morning for you. Like, is it okay if I pick Bethany up? There will be a lot. And I'm just like, I don't understand. Like, what's the problem here? What did she tell you? And so I guess she told her teacher that because it would, we didn't have to be at school at 7 in the morning, that it was just too early for mom, and she didn't want to get up.
So how much work did she have to do that day? She didn't go.
And I was like, oh. I'm like, well, let me tell you what really happened. How many people are getting out of bed before 7? And so then she's just like, oh, all right. You do you, and we'll tend our trip then. So then she got to... She not only had that problem she had to fix with me, which resulted in, hey, you know, you were pretty unkind to me, and, you know, like, this is what I need from you to repair our relationship. And so she had to write an apology letter to her teacher saying that, you know, I'm sorry, I lied, I did something wrong, and I was untruthful to you, and she damaged that relationship as well. And so she had to make amends there, she had to make amends with me, and she had to show up to school and face the consequences, right? Because there was consequences at home and in school. So... She's never done it again. Okay, and this one, I'll share one more because it's my absolute favorite thing that I've ever done to my children.
Is this being recorded?
One of my girls, one of the older girls when they were younger, they were about 6, 7 years old. And I don't know what they decided to mutter under their breath because they had to do something they didn't want to do. And they were just like, oh, stupid.
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, okay. So then the rest of the day, I was just like, I'm going to need you to, you know, pick up all the toys on the floor and sweep. And she's like, why do I have to do that? Like, mom's too stupid. And so then I'm like, I'm going to need you to wash all the dishes. And she's like, why do I have to do that? Mom's too stupid. And we went through the entire house. And she cleaned that house top to bottom. So she's like, why? This isn't fair. I'm like, I guess mom's just too stupid to do all those chores. And so she got it down. And it never done it again. So, I'm just paying for their therapy when they're older, guys. It's okay. So, and my third point, and this is my final point, and I think we're doing small groups today, is partner with the people in your children's life. And whether that be through schools or churches, preschools, after-school programs, weekend programs, whatever it is. My husband and I worked in children's ministry for many, many years. He was a children's minister here at Bethel for 11 years, and just until September of last year, then his job changed here. But I think very highly of volunteering in some capacity, for just for a couple reasons. One, you just want to know what your kid's learning. And the other part is you want those people in your lives, right? You want people who are pouring into your children and doing good work with them, you want to continue doing that. So whatever I do to make your job a little easier so that you keep doing it, I'll do. So we don't really do extracurricular activities with our kids. They're not interested in it, and I'm not terribly interested in forcing them to it. So we just don't do it. And I'm fine with that. I don't feel like I need to go do a bunch of stuff, so it's okay. But all my children are in public school, I mentioned that already. Their teacher and the staff have been an absolutely amazing resource for us. And so we often will partner with the teachers and the schools, just whatever we can do to help in whatever we can. We have gone to their teachers and I have gone to their school counselor, which I did not realize was a good thing, that I could just go to them and talk to them about my child. I was like, this is fantastic. And because they have a degree in this stuff, right? They have knowledge in things that our children are doing. So like, if I can talk to you and get ideas of and how I can work through these things with my kids, then why not? So, yeah, I have a high value for their wisdom in that. I'll tell a couple of stories about my kids and just some issues we have, or issues. My oldest child, when she was very young, she had a phobia of dogs. And she still does to a limited degree, but not as bad as when she was younger. And like, I don't mean she was just kind of scared of dogs, where she was just like, didn't like them. Like, she was absolutely terrified, and it was... it ruined every area of her life. She couldn't go outside without being terrified that a dog was just going to run and attack her. She couldn't walk to school. She couldn't do anything on her own. She couldn't go to other people's houses because what if they had a dog? And just it affected every area of her life, and she was just absolutely terrified all the time. And she couldn't go on field trips. If they had to walk, she wouldn't go. It's just like, what if a dog runs across the street and attacks me? Like, it wasn't logical, right? But she was absolutely terrified, and it was so stressful on us, and it felt like such a silly thing to be so afraid of, and but just had it was just so stressful for the whole family. And so I gone and talked to her, the guidance counselor at her school, and I was just like, what do I do here? Like, I've gotten a lot of advice that, you know, wasn't rooted in good wisdom on how to deal with fears and phobias. And you don't want to traumatize your child by exposing them to the things they're afraid of, right? Like, there's a certain healthy dose of overcoming fear, but you don't want to traumatize them by just being like, get over it, here's a dog, no. Right? So I gone to the guidance counselor at the school, and I just said, you know, like, I don't know what to do here. Like, it affects everything. Like, I talked to her over and over again, explaining that this isn't going to happen. Like, you're just overthinking it, you're not getting your perspective, whatever. And, like, I don't know what to do because it is affecting everything. And her guidance counselor said, you know, like, her fear of dogs is unreasonable, and you're not going to be able to reason with it. So you need to stop trying. And she's like, I'd rather than reason with her, work with her and make her feel safe, and she will eventually realize that it's not feasible. And so we did. So when we went places, we say, you need us to call ahead and make sure they don't have a dog. Yes. And then if they had a dog, we'd say, would you be willing to put the dog in a pen while she's there? And the answer is no, she's going to go. And that affected a lot of family get-togethers, because we had family who had dogs who were their children, and they would have put them in a pen or put them outside, and she's like, we can't come in. You know, like, her not being afraid for the next 2 hours is more important than spending time together. So we did stuff like that, and we have, like, this humongous dog now. You never know that kid was terrified of dogs. We have this, like, 80-pound boxer mix, and, like, she got it over eventually, but it was because just sitting down with this counselor and her being able to teach me stuff that I didn't know about it, where I would have been, had I taken advice from other people, I'd just been like, put her in a room with the dog, right? But it was good wisdom, and it worked. We had one other situation where one of my older girls, and this was 2 years back now. She was walking to school, and somehow, I don't know how it happened, I suspect how it happened. I think she was reading while she was walking. She's never confirmed that, but I suspect that's what happened. But she got lost. She got turned around and couldn't figure out where she was. And so the school called me and said, you know, so-and-so's not here. Did you keep her home today? And I said, no, I sent her walking like a half hour ago. She should be there. And it wouldn't be the first time the school has called and told me she's not there and she's just in the bathroom. So I really wasn't terribly concerned at that point. I just figured she's in the bathroom, they didn't check. So I just said, you know, can you just check the bathroom? And she's just not in there. And they're like, well, we already checked the bathroom. I'm like, well, did you check all the bathrooms? Because she's probably there. And so they said, well, we'll give it another 10 minutes or so and then see. And 10 minutes passed and she didn't come. And so they call me in and they're like, she's not here. We checked all the bathrooms. We don't know where she is. And so I'm getting a little panicked. I'm like, I don't know where she is either. And so we started just kind of looking around the neighborhood. We couldn't find her, and we called the school, and they had no clue where she was. I had no clue where she was, and so we're like, what do we do? Like, I have no idea what to do. Like, this kid is just gone, and I don't know where she is. And so the school said, you know, I think it's time to call the police and ask them to help and, like, to file a report. And so we did. And when we called the police, and I don't blame them because it's normal for them to not look an hour after a kid just took off. Right? And so they wouldn't do anything right away. They said that she'd likely just return home at 3:30 when school's done and is just skipping school for the day. But she wasn't a child who's ever skipped school before, and it's just not her personality to do something like that. So I knew it was off, and the school knew it was off. And so I'm, like, in the principal's office having a breakdown, and he's just like, you know what, we have a school resource officer. I'm gonna call him. And so he called the school resource officer, explained the situation, and told him, you know, like, this kid's never done something like this. It is out of the ordinary. Like, can we do more than that? Like, can we find this person now so we can look for her now? And the officer said, yeah, we can go ahead and do that. So just through that, like, us having a good relationship with the principal and him having a good relationship with them, we were able to put a missing person report out on her. and in 10 minutes they found her. Mm-hmm. And she'd been missing for 3.5 hours at that point. Mm-hmm. And in 10 minutes they found her. And it was such a relief. And she had genuinely just got lost. She got turned around, didn't know where she was, and couldn't find her way home. And so, yeah, so just building relationships with the people who are in your kid's life, it's beneficial both ways, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so if you don't have it all together, you're in good company. I don't think any of us do. So, and, you know, do what works for you. Right, so our parent environment will be different, our parent styles are going to be different, and that's all okay. So, you know, if something works for you, great. If it doesn't, I'm not offended.